Good afternoon, everyone. This is County Commissioner Bruce Erb, and this meeting, an emergency meeting of the Blair County Board of Commissioners, is called to order. Before we proceed, due to the fact that this meeting is being conducted.
Can you just speak a little bit louder?
I'll move the microphone closer. Is that any better? Is that better or not?
A little bit muffled.
Still. I don't think I can get any closer. Before we proceed, due to the fact this meeting is being conducted via telephone conference, it is important to lay the ground rules for the order of this meeting at the start. First, only the Board of Commissioners, the solicitor, the county administrator, and the finance director may leave their telephones unmuted during the entire meeting, but we will request that each avoids excess noise from their location. All other participants should mute their telephones until called upon to speak. Public participants may only speak during the designated comment period near the beginning of the meeting and must keep their phones muted during the rest of the meeting. Each person needs to avoid interrupting the person speaking, and each speaker must state their name before talking each time they speak, so others will know who is speaking and to ensure the minutes will be accurate. Thank you to everyone for your cooperation with these ground rules. We're going to begin, as is our practice, with a moment of silent reflection. We ask that everyone mute their phones during this time, after which, for those who have a flag at their availability, we will stand for the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag.
Of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
At this time, we'll open the meeting to any public comment. Hearing none, we'll ask if there are any commissioner comments. Commissioner Webster?
No, I'm just looking forward to the information that we get today.
Okay, thank you. Commissioner Burke?
Nothing at this time.
All right, I'm going to call upon our chief clerk, Nicole Heminger, to do a roll call. Nicole?
We have all three commissioners. Finance, Jennifer First Leppe, Finance Director.
Here.
Solicitor Nathan Karn.
I'm here.
From the media, Kay Stevens. Kay, are you on the call? If everyone remembers, it's *4 to unmute your phone. I'm sorry, Kate. Thank you. And then it's *4 to remute. Yep, you're welcome. It's *4 to remute once you've unmuted yourself. But do we have Public Safety Director Mark Taylor on the line?
Yes, I'm on the call.
Thank you, Mark. Controller AC Stickle? Controller, if you're on, it's *4 to unmute.
Sorry, I was hitting *4. I am here.
Thank you.
I'm here.
And is there any other member? Thank you. Is there any other members of the public on the call?
Donna Carson, Hollidaysburg Borough Tax Collector.
Thank you, Donna. And is there anyone else on the call that I haven't acknowledged? Should be one more person that hasn't identified themselves.
Judge Doyle is a member of the public.
Oh, thank you, Judge. Sir, I believe we're ready to start.
Okay, thank you very much. The purpose for our meeting is for the discussion of a piece of legislation that has passed both houses, and then the discussion of a another proposed piece of legislation, which I believe has passed one of the houses of the legislature. So I'm going to turn some time over right now to our solicitor, Nathan Karn, to kind of lead us into the discussion of this and give us an analysis or explanation of first Senate Bill 841, which is has a provision to extend the discount and or penalty period for property taxes. Commissioner or Solicitor Karn?
Last night or yesterday, the Senate passed Senate Bill 841. There's a lot of other things in it, but of importance to the county and municipalities is a provision that addresses the ability to extend the discount period and the and deal with the penalty, whether there's going to be any penalty or extend the penalty period. You may recall from previous discussions from CCAP that they were not going to do any legislation on this. Ultimately, they obviously chose to do that. I think that they did need to do that. I don't believe the current law allowed for it. And so I think addressing it, if for municipalities that want to do that, was necessary to be able to permit them to do that. So you're aware of the current status, because I wanted to know exactly where we were at. The Senate has signed the bill today. So originally this bill, it started in the Senate, it went to the House and was amended. The House passed it. It went back to the Senate with the amendments. The Senate passed it, and then the Senate signed it today. But as part of the formal process, it still has to get signed by the House before it goes to the governor's desk. They're expecting the House to sign it tomorrow. They do not have, an immediate indication of what the governor is going to do. I suspect that because of the other provisions in the bill, one of them relates to a health care task force that is already in existence that I don't believe has anything to do at all with COVID-19, that it will be signed, and I would hope that they would impress upon the governor, if he's going to sign it, to do it quickly, because many municipalities across the state, not just in Blair County, because of the timing of when they send their tax bills out, will be coming up on the expiration of their discount period. And I think you can all appreciate what a problem would be created if there was a gap, if somebody wanted to extend the discount period, if there was a gap in time from when that discount period ended, and then you sort of try to retroactively after the fact say, no, it's going to continue because you could have checks coming at the wrong amounts and, you know, all kinds of problems. So part of the reason that I thought it was important to begin discussing this is because of all of those mechanics that are going to have to be put in place if the county commissioners decide this is something they want to do. Ultimately, this is your policy decision. I'm just going to be addressing the legalities of how you do it and also some of the process impact if you do choose to do it, so you're aware of that. Today's the 15th of April. The governor signs it Thursday or Friday. You're at the 16th or 17th. You know, there's only a couple weeks left till the end of the month, and the tax collectors need to know, what's going on and what they're doing. With that timing element down, the next thing I wanted to kind of walk through with you is there's obviously a lot of different people involved in the tax collection process, billing, and so forth. And when you start making changes like this, you got to make sure that you you know what's happening in each one of those individuals and that they can handle that. So the normal process, obviously, is that the assessment office, on behalf of the municipalities, prepares the annual billing for the county and the municipality, which goes out on a single bill. The only exception to that is the city of Altoona, which sends their own bill themselves, so that the county sends a bill to residents, property owners within the city, but the only thing appearing on that tax bill is the county tax. Another exception is Frankstown Township, which has no real estate tax, and a final exception is the portion of Tunnel Hill Borough that is located in Blair County. That is collected by the Allegheny Township tax collector, but those bills also only include the county tax, so you can kind of think of Tunnel Hill Borough and the city as being basically the same in formatting. For everyone else, they would get a bill which would have a single dollar amount on the front page where you see the amount due for the total of the municipal and county tax. And that front total will have an amount under the 60-day period for the discount, the 60-day window for the phase that follows the discount, and then everything after that is in the penalty phase. Initially, a concern that I was raising related to the downstream people who were going to be involved. If the county made a change and the municipality did not make the same change or made no change at all, or if a municipality makes a change and the county doesn't make a change. So where there are where there's not consistency on the same tax bill. So obviously Frankstown, the city, and the Tunnel Hill Borough are not part of my concern or this conversation because there's nobody else involved in those situations. So where you would have potentially different outcomes with the county and the municipalities, we needed to know what impact that would have. And in scurrying around today, what I was able to discern is in the treasurer's office of the county, which receives the taxes, they are not, the way they receive their information and so forth, it's not going to impact them because while they do get information on a standardized report that DCED requires that includes the taxpayers themselves, that is not information that they readily or regularly utilize. What they're looking at primarily is the dollars and cents and the check that is coming from the tax collector. So it's the only impact, I guess, to the treasurer is if you would agree to extend the discount or eliminate or extend, you know, penalty to elimination to zero, essentially, there might be less dollars coming in, but that's not a process impact on the treasurer's office. It's just a dollars and cents one. For the Tax Claim Bureau, which is another entity that's affected downstream, they also do not get duplicates or other information from the tax collectors. Many of the tax collectors, and this is going to be relevant to the next issue that I'll address, but many of the tax collectors, in fact, most of them, use a software system referred to as RAC, R-A-K, and they're able to download their unpaid taxpayers into the tax claim software that we operate under. So that issue is simplified in as it relates to the Tax Claim Bureau because of the manner in which all they really need to know is, you know, who didn't pay, and the periods of time are not really relevant to them because either you paid or you did not pay. Then the last group, and not by order of importance, but just because they are the ones maybe that are most impacted, which is why I saved them at the last, is the tax collectors. And because of what I mentioned related to their software, while they are not authorized to collect a portion of a tax bill, you know, if somebody said, I just want to pay the county and I don't want to pay, I'll pick on Hollidaysburg Borough since tax collector Carson's on the line, I don't want to pay the borough tax right now, I just want to pay the county tax. Their warrant is for the whole amount, and so, you know, they can either accept the whole thing or none of it, but they can't accept some portion of it. However, because of the way their software operates and because they are creating dual reports for the borough of Hollidaysburg and for the Blair County Treasurer to report their tax receipts, they would be able, if Hollidaysburg Borough, for instance, elected to make no change to the discount and no change to the penalty, but the county elected to make a change, they would be able to make an adjustment within their system to do that. The only two municipalities that apparently right now are not using RAC are Duncansville Borough and Newry Borough. They are still doing things by hand in those two municipalities. Obviously, they are, in the case of Newry, a smaller, much smaller municipality. Duncansville, by obviously, is small, but still not as big as others. But I say that to say that, you know, the good news is that by far the most of the populace is paying taxes to a tax collector that would be able to make adjustments easily, particularly if the municipality and the county did not act in the same way as it relates to those adjustments. Duncansville and Newry may require the county to assist with maybe printing new duplicates that would be separated from the county and the municipality in some way. I don't want to try to speculate or figure that out in this meeting today, except to indicate to you that if you would choose to do something and those municipalities did not act in the same manner, there may be some things that are necessary from the assessment office to make that work in those municipalities. I would say, though, if Newry Borough and Duncansville acted in the same manner as the county, if the county were to do something, or if we don't do anything and they don't do anything, obviously there's no issue, but if we would do something and they would do something, that's not really an issue at all, because then they just ignore the dates that appear on their current duplicates, and by basis of the resolution of the boroughs or the county, just use those dates. The only problem that would involve Duncansville and Newry, because they are not using RAC, is if we do one thing and they do something else. The final thing relative to this, that from a process standpoint that I want to address, is that what I said at the beginning as it related to the bills that the assessment office has sent out, if the county does something and the municipality does something different, the tax bills that the taxpayers are holding in their hands right now have a single number on the front for the total. On the back, it breaks it out within those municipalities. And so, for instance, in the county, it would even, I believe, break it out by the different county millages. And the same thing would be true, for instance, in Hollidaysburg Borough, where there's a fire tax, there's a light, street light, of course, the general fund, a park tax. But those numbers would be on the back, and the relevance of that is if the county were for, to instance, say we're going to extend to August 31 the discount period, but the borough does not take any action, we're going to have to really communicate to the public how important it is for them to look on the back side of their tax bill and to add up what they owe the borough if they want to meet the discount period or the face period, and pay that on time according to those deadlines to the tax collector. Because if they don't pay attention to that and they send in the discount number for the whole from the first page, again using Hollidaysburg as the example, to Ms. Carson, she's got say on $1,000, if 400 of that is the county and 500 of that is the borough, well, the 500 on the borough wasn't paid in the discount period. And so they didn't send the right amount. They needed to pay 600 dollars, because I'm picking wild numbers, but there was $100 at face. So they needed to send $600 for the borough, but still only the $400 for the county. And so they're going to have to send a check back and say, well, you didn't send the right amount. And so because the tax bills are the way they are, and all we're doing is adjusting time periods, even though the tax collectors can go into their software system and make adjustments for that, the trickier issue is the taxpayers understanding that only a portion of that bill may be subject to that extension period of time rather than the whole portion of the bill. I know that was complicated on that last part, so before I kind of take one more step and then I'll wrap up, did everybody understand that explanation?
Yes, I did, Nathan. Thank you very much. Believe it or not, I'm
the
good
only
too.
Others. I'm good too. Okay. The last, the only other thing that I say it like there's, it's only a small thing. The other thing that, that it does exist here is what the actual rule is that the legislature passed. There is some debate about the flexibility that's in that. The statute in a very generic summary provides that you can extend the discount period to August 31, and you can waive your penalties as long as it's paid by December 31. The more minute and difficult issue relates to whether you have flexibility to pick a date to extend the discount that is not August 31, and whether you can pick a date to waive penalty that would occur before December 31, but in which penalty would still be assessed for some period of time between that date and December 31. I think that is open to a pretty decent debate. I can't give you a final answer on what is the exact right answer. My best answer, I believe, is that you get the ability to go to August 31 for your discount and December 31 with no penalty, and that you cannot do anything in between that. But I certainly recognize that other people are taking a different opinion and approach to that issue.
Nathan, it's my question would be on that then is if assuming that that it is to has to be either it can't be to July 31, it has to be to August 31, or it can't be to November 30th, it has to be to 12/31. Can you separate those and do only half of those? If it would, so, in other words, would you be able to keep the discount period where it now is, but extend the flat tax period, or you know, some combination thereof? Or is it all or none?
I'm absolutely confident that you can choose what, let's call number one discount and number two penalty. There's no question in my mind that you can choose to do number one by itself, number two by itself, or number one and number two together. I'm not concerned about that as a question. What I think is a question is whether you can pick a date for the discount other than August 31, and whether you can pick a date with no late fee other than December 31.
Thank you. Are there any other questions for Nathan on this particular?
This is Amy. I don't have any other questions. Commissioner Irv, you asked the question I was going to ask. Thank you.
Sure. If not, before we go on to Senate Bill 327, a completely different issue, I have asked our County Finance Director Jennifer Sleppy to join us today. Previously, I had asked Jen to work up some numbers and estimates based on changing both the discount and the penalty dates and what that would mean in terms of tax revenue to the county, which obviously we budgeted based on the dates that that are on the bills, and if this would change, what it would mean. So I'm going to ask her if she'd mind going through the process or thinking a little and just maybe share what she sees or can estimate at this time from where we stand.
Sure. So in looking at this, I looked at our average receipts in taxes in 2018 and 2019 and averaged those and increased them for our 2020 amount. Typically, we receive on average about $23,755,000 at during the discount period. So we receive the majority of our taxes during the already established discount period before April 30th. On average, we receive about $6 million in the face period, so between May 1st and June 30th. And again, on average, we receive approximately $2.4 million after June 30th, so during the penalty phase. Those receipts, if we use those averages and we look at extending the discount period until August 31st, we would be giving up revenue of around $111,000 in additional discounts. And if we extend the penalty phase to do no penalty until December 31st, we would lose about $218,000 in penalties on average. So in total, we're looking at a loss of revenue of around $330,000 from those two actions if we did both of them together. This is just an estimate, and this is just using the data that I could quantify. There are also other things that that we really can't quantify right now. Things like the additional borrowing that might have to happen due to the timing of the tax receipts if the discount date was extended or the penalty date, or not the penalty date extended, but if there were no penalties. So we would have timing issues there with our revenue. I think that would affect our cash flow. And that, of course, might affect borrowing and would mean additional interest that would ultimately fall to the taxpayers as well.
Jen, I think, you know, when we've budgeted in the past, and I don't know whether Controller Stickle has joined us or not, but the thought was normally, as you point out, we receive the bulk of the funds as of the April 30th date because of the discount expiration period, which allows us at that point in time to pay off our tax and revenue anticipation note, where the county, because the county's only tax revenue is real estate tax, and we begin the year without any tax income because bills don't even go out till March 1st. As a result, we borrowed this year. We did a tax and revenue anticipation note of $10 million. We have not borrowed the entire amount on that. I believe what's outstanding at this point in time is less, just under $2 million. However, projecting out there, we could essentially have some additional borrowing needed because we would have, if there was waiting to pay the discount till the end of the discount period and it was extended, we could have two more months to pick up the bulk of that money that we would have to borrow in order to get through.
Right. Yes.
Okay. Understanding that, at the end of 2019, I know we read the school districts and some that have substantial reserve funds. We do not at the county, and I know that the county audit is not back, but your unaudited projection for year end, our general fund, essentially our reserve balance that is either unencumbered or uncommitted, what roughly would that balance be?
Roughly, and again, estimating because our audited mm-hmm. numbers are not back yet, roughly that balance would be $4.8
million. Okay. And for the 2020 budget, we did adopt, the last Board of Commissioners adopted a budget that was a deficit budget. What was the amount of the deficit projected on that?
The amount of the projected deficit was $1.8
million, okay.
leaving us around $3 million.
And as you have reminded us regularly, what is the standard that is expected in order to be essentially solvent safe, safety standards that we should be maintaining in terms of a reserve fund?
The standard is 15%. That's of your total revenue.
Mm-hmm.
We had taken that a step down and did 15% of our revenue that was not grant related. That number comes to between $8 and $9 million.
So we started the year.
I'm sorry, what number did she say it was taken down to? From 15% of total revenue, we had taken a step down.
We had taken a step down, and instead of basing it on the 15% of total revenue, we based it on 15% of our revenue that does not come from grants. So it
okay.
would be our tax revenue and our fees and services.
And so that took it down to closer to $9 million?
Yes.
So we began the year then over $4 million below where we should have been.
Yes.
And projecting end of the year, $6 million below.
Yes.
Okay.
Correct.
And I approve. Yes.
Controller Stickle.
If I could just weigh in a minute.
Certainly.
Controller Stickle. Back from reports, and again, everything is not audited, we began the year with about $4.1 million, but that includes assigned and unassigned, which I think is fairly much in line with what the finance director had anticipated. It's very important to remember that over the years, we have spent more than we've taken in, and we've gone, you know, we have dwindled down our unassigned fund balance to the point, and you just alluded to this, that we, you know, should have about $8 million to carry over, and we don't. And some of the counties across the Commonwealth are carrying over $40 and $50 million, so they may not have nearly as much of an issue. And while, you know, I would love to extend benefits to our taxpayers, I am extremely concerned that if we were to delay this, it's not just delaying the revenue and where our budget is tight and we were looking for savings of $1,500 $100 here and there, $330,000 is a significant amount of revenue to lose. That being said, it would be great if everybody paid during the discount period. That would be fine. The biggest concern, as Jen mentioned, is the timing. Right now, we have received revenue. We have received a fair amount of revenue, but it's pretty much on par with where we were this time last year. Many of the individual taxpayers, the ones I believe this law would be designed to protect, have already paid. Mine is held in escrow, as I still have a small mortgage, and I have paid my taxes, but my mortgage company has not. The vast majority of money still to come in is likely to be from banks and mortgage companies. They've already collected the tax. They're not going to send it until they absolutely have to. Therefore, they're going to earn the interest on it. I, as the mortgage holder, am not be deferred. We were fortunate in good planning, and so what we've done, that we only drew down a little over $1.5 million so far, and I would have anticipated paying that back, because every day that we have it costs the taxpayers interest. If we have to wait until June or July or August to get revenue that we typically would have gotten in April, those bills still have to be paid. And that means that we have to draw down even more, and maybe the $10 million isn't enough, but we're stuck. That's the maximum that we're allowed to borrow each year. And even if we can do it with $10 million, that's an additional expense to every taxpayer of Blair County, because we've got to pay that interest. So I'm just very, very concerned about any real delays, particularly on the extending the discount period beyond the discount period or the penalty phase. I know that people are hurting, and there are a lot of issues, but I'm afraid that if we did this, it would actually hurt our taxpayers even more than not doing anything.
Thank you, Controller Stickle. And that would be, I would assume you're saying that because it will have to be made up in the form of a tax increase in coming years.
Correct.
Okay. And the one thing that...
somebody's got to pay that, and it's only the taxpayers that can pay it.
Right. The one thing that that is not taken into account, and I'm certainly not faulting Finance Director Sleppy for this, but she hasn't, because I don't believe she can take into account the additional interest costs from borrowing, which become an unknown on this. And again, worst comes to worst, that we would hit the top of our TRAN amount, which we tried to set high enough, again, not obviously anticipating that, but anticipating that there could be, as there have been in the past, budget delays from the Commonwealth, who also is facing a deficit that could be as high as $4 billion, we're told, depending how much longer the slowdown is. So what kind of a recession we run into. So there are a number of variety of issues there. I think the commissioners need to at least think about as we go forward here, in terms of how we would, if we would take this step, how we're going to make up that lost revenue. Any other discussion on Senate Bill 841? Okay, and we.
The only thing that I would just kind of tie up is Nicole and I wanted to give the board an opportunity to be able to get the information, have any kind of discussion they might want to have regarding whether there was interest in doing something. You obviously can't act until the governor signs, but if that would happen, between now and Tuesday's meeting, if you were to do something, the Tuesday the 21st, the regular meeting, it would really be vital, whatever that action might be, if you were going to take any action at all, would need to happen, because I think one of the biggest messes of it that we could have is if we, the county chose to act sometime after the discount period expires and then tried to retroactively deal with that. I can't imagine the mess that would be for the tax collectors, for the auditors that audit the tax collectors, for the tax claim bureau and working with the tax collectors to get who got what on time, for the taxpayers who have checks that are the wrong amount. It's a long list. So I'm not saying what you should or shouldn't do. I'm just saying that if the governor, presumably signs this before Tuesday, that it would be very important to move with whatever it is the commissioner would be inclined to do.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Korn. I think that kind of almost begs the question in terms of discussions with the affected municipalities to see if I think it to be a little bit collaborative, because this obviously what we do affects them, affects their tax collectors, and so on. And I know that this is something that I believe Solicitor Korn and Chief Clerk Heminger have discussed on. So I'm, you know, going to ask the Chief Clerk if she feels that we would be able to either ask the municipalities to reach out to our office, as there are calculating the number of affected municipalities, it's large, in order to solicit some of their thoughts. I have talked to one township manager and one borough manager in terms of just trying to get where they stood on it, but just in order to take action that would in such a way that would be most beneficial, at least harmful to everyone involved. Nicole?
Yeah, I definitely can weigh in on that. And Bruce, you and I had a personal conversation earlier today about this bill, and we felt that was a good path to take, was to try and mirror or somehow collaborate with those municipalities. I believe that in some ways that we can still do that. I don't necessarily know that now that Nathan has had a chance to research and do a little bit of that research, we can act independently. I don't think we all have to come to the same conclusion. But they're certainly welcome to reach out to us. Good ways to email are, obviously my email address is nheminger@blaircode.org. We can certainly ask for those comments to come back to me, and I can filter them out to the board individually. There's also now we have a new email address, publiccomment@blaircode.org. So that's another way for anyone to comment. Public comment is a good way to get that comment back to us. And those certainly can be distributed to whichever board or whichever individual they need to go to. If it's helpful, we can certainly reach out to the municipalities and ask them what their position is. But I think at this point, it's a little bit different than our conversation of a couple hours ago, which it seems like that's what I've been saying for a month now. Everything has changed in the last hour, which, and we're just doing our best to react to that. Right now, I don't necessarily think it's as important as I did at 9 o'clock this morning, but it's certainly something that we can definitely try to put in an endeavor towards. So,
Maybe we just use a public forum here to say if any of the municipalities want to reach out to us. And that's really what I was suggesting, that perhaps if invite them to feel free to dialogue with our office.
That's perfect.
On this. And I should say, speaking of things that are happening at the last minute and are not even, the ink is not dry on the printer yet, kind of segues into our next item, which is Senate Bill 327, which some of us literally printed off before I came to the meeting here and didn't even have a chance to read through yet, only CCAP's summary of it so far. Solicitor Korn, have you had a chance to look at this?
Just a second. Who's speaking? Is it Amy?
Hello. This is Commissioner. Yeah, this is Commissioner Amy Webster. I just wanted to make one comment before
Sure.
we go on. I was waiting to hear what Solicitor Korn had to say and what Chief Clerk Heminger had to say before I didn't want to interrupt you guys. But before we go to the next thing, I just wanted to make a couple little comments. Because we need to discuss this and have an idea of which direction we're going or not, and we certainly do want to hear from the municipalities. My email address is awebster@blairco.org, and I would invite any of the public who wants to weigh in on this, as well as any of the tax collectors and municipal officials, to certainly feel free to contact me. But in listening to the information presented by Solicitor Korn and Finance Director Sleppy, which is very helpful, I am inclined to think that in order to help the tax provide for their own health and safety issues that they're trying to deal with, I would be inclined to look at extending the discount period, but not do anything with the penalty, meaning that on September 1st, when the new time period starts, it would just be penalty. We would not have any kind of face, obviously, but I would not want to eliminate the penalty, which would make a very different view of what kind of loss we might be looking at in terms of revenues. It would certainly be significantly less. And I would certainly encourage anyone who has been unaffected or minimally affected by this to hopefully pay their taxes before April 30th to minimize the negative impact on our treasury and therefore our county's ability to pay bills. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak.
Sure.
Thank you. And one thing that I forgot to mention, I did have a conversation earlier, and Controller Stickle alluded to this, but I verified that with a local tax collector here in Hollidaysburg Borough, Donna Carson, that the there is a large single payer for all the mortgage companies, essentially most of the out-of-town banks and everyone else who collects that escrow and who pays that money, that tax money, on the literally last day of the discount period. She said she has the FedEx van pulls up to her office and delivers that check. So that's and I guess that becomes the question on the discount and how much, and we have no way that I know of calculating how much that single payer pays county-wide in terms of county taxes. But that's that's the quandary we have in terms of the extension, or if we could extend the discount for a shorter period than to August, which again would kind of split the difference and certainly help us to minimize the additional borrowing we had to do. But as of now, it appears that isn't something that we're going to be able to do. Anything else on that before we go on to Senate Bill 327? Solicitor Karn, we're going to turn it back to you to talk about Senate Bill 327.
Okay, so this is still in its early infancy, but another reason that we wanted to also go ahead and do this, since we were meaning to get on the table the issue related to the property tax, is that this bill was amended last night in the Senate to add a provision, and they're expecting a full Senate vote today. It would then need to go over to the House to be approved, and then obviously the governor would have to allow for it by signing it. But what it, in a nutshell, would allow is for counties to begin to make the decision of when to allow their non-life-sustaining businesses to reopen under certain circumstances. The proposed legislation would have no impact, obviously, on any existing business that has been deemed life-sustaining. It would only be on those businesses that are non-life-sustaining. And then the bill essentially allows the county, in consultation with the Emergency Management Agency and other stakeholders, to develop a plan
people who are, if the stay-at-home order is still in place, would allow people to go to those businesses that the county permits to open without being considered to be in violation of the stay-at-home order. And if the county didn't do anything at all, then they would just continue under the governor's order of which businesses are closed according to his existing order. So right now, I think one of the most important messages that I can give you and to the public at large is, if they're reading this, it's not been passed, it's not the law, the county isn't on the cusp of issuing any kind of a plan so that businesses can reopen, and I think we want to get that out so that people are not confused in thinking that this is something that's going to happen immediately or even very quickly. And of course, it has to go through the hoops of what I just said, which is the Senate has to, in fact, vote for it this afternoon. The House has to vote for it, and the governor has to agree to sign it. But assuming all that happens, it is going to become critical to be ready to have the people in place to begin looking at whether this is something the county wants to do. And no doubt, you know, there are going to be folks that are in that category of non-life sustaining businesses who are going to be anxious to have the county consider adopting a plan to allow their businesses to resume operation. As short as that explanation is, that's a pretty good, I mean, it's only a two and a half page set of provisions. It's not a very involved piece of legislation. I think the devil, of course, is always in the details, and those details would be what would the plan look like in Blair County in terms of whether you would allow all businesses that are considered currently non-life sustaining to open, or whether only certain businesses that are non-life sustaining. And the reason I say that is the legislation particularly allows you to utilize the United States Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency definition of what is essential critical infrastructure business to make that decision, because there are things right now that are considered essential critical infrastructure according to the CISA that are currently closed in Pennsylvania despite the fact that the federal government would list them as being essential. So ultimately, that's going to require, you know, some work. Again, if the county commissioners are inclined to step out and form their own mitigation plan, if they would do nothing, then, you know, whatever the governor continues to do, if it gets extended beyond April 30, for instance, then Blair County would be continued under that same order, versus if this would be signed into legislation next week, the county could potentially develop a plan and be opened before the expiration of the governor's order if the governor continues his order till May 15th or whatever. So, obviously, a critical component of that will be Mark Taylor, because, as I've already indicated, the county is to consult with the Emergency Management Agency as part of developing that plan. But as I said, that's pretty much a quick review of it, but it's not a very big piece of legislation. Most of the details will be in what the plan would look like if you would do one.
Questions for Solicitor Korn? I do want to share a response that was drafted by the board of the County Commissioners Association of Pennsylvania, which is relatively short, but so we know essentially where CCAP stands on it. It states that counties are on the front lines of the COVID-19 response and continue to be committed to developing solutions. However, we believe that these important decisions must be made regionally, and a comprehensive collaborative process must be developed first that brings counties, the legislature, and the administration to the table to collectively determine what is best for the health, safety, and economy of the residents of the Commonwealth. Regional collaboratives must make these determinations carefully and must have access to data and information that accounts for potential impacts that expand beyond county borders. Other discussion. Again, noting that this is quite new, as in within the last 3.5 hours that we've been aware of it.
I believe Commissioner Director Taylor was on the phone. I don't know if he would have any kind of comment on this, or he was emailed it about an hour ago from me and had heard rumors but didn't really get in depth. So I'm not sure if Director Taylor would be able to or have any questions for Solicitor Carn, or if it's just too premature at the moment. In my mind, it's too premature, but he might have a better understanding of it.
Sure thing.
Mark, do you have any questions or concerns, comments?
Do we know if Director Taylor's still on with us?
On. Mark, if you're talking,
I don't have it.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
That's
I
good.
I don't have any specific questions. Of course, I have lots of concerns, so I really get time to think this through. And I think CCAP's version of the regional approach might be better than countywide, but that's just a quick thought. Again, what's our numbers going to be? Where are we going to be at as compared to the rest of the state? Nathan mentioned the critical infrastructures. Those would seem to be fairly easy, again, depending on our positive cases. But I apologize if this is new. I don't want to make comments without really thinking things through.
No apologies necessary at all. We didn't want to put you on the spot, and that's why I was kind of leery of asking you. But I'm glad that you were able to sit and through with us and listen to Solicitor Carn's explanation of it, and certainly as we receive more information from CCAP, we'll share this. I'm sure you'll be hearing significantly equal or more information from your various sources, and we will happily share that and welcome your input as this process goes on. Is there any other discussion at this time? Again, we want to thank Solicitor Carn for his preparation, analysis, and work for this meeting, which was, as always, just very well done and under a tight time constraint. So we thank him for that. And if there is no objection, we'll adjourn at this time. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you, Commissioner.